My name is Immortal Technique. I was born in Sudamerica, far as soon as we can go, much farther than Los Angeles, in El Hospital Militar de Lima. I came here when I was about 3 years old. That's the military and hospital in Lima, for those of you who don't understand Spanish. I'll be very honest with you. At a very young age, I probably wouldn't be one of the high school students in this assembly. I probably would have been intoxicated outside or running around robbing and stealing with my friends. And if I was here, I'd probably be high or drunk, laughing in the background with some of my friends. And that type of behavior is what actually landed me in prison. It's what gave me a violent disposition. I felt like the only solution to my problems was to confront somebody physically. If somebody said something about me, I wasn't gonna confront you to talk it out. I was gonna confront you later after school and beat you into a bloody pulp, because I felt like that was the only solution to the problem. I felt in my mind there was no other solution to the problem. I started disrespecting myself and disrespecting the legacy of my people instead of searching into it. And when I did search into it, I can elaborate on some of the things that the brother was talking about earlier, both of our people here. That there is a mythology about conquest. There's a mythology about slavery. It is that our people were conquered simply by guns, simply by the force of arms, simply by strength. We were not conquered in these ways. We were conquered by lies. We were conquered by promises of peace. We were conquered by divisions amongst our people. And now whether that's just so-called Latino, and I say so-called Latino because what does that word really mean? It just means you speak a Latin-based language. If that's the case, then French people are Latino. Then Italian people are Latino. Then Romanian people from Eastern Europe are Latino because they also speak a Latin-based language. When we look at who we really are, we are an indigenous and an African people with traces of Spaniard in our society because it was raped into our culture. Why is the difference so big between East Coast and West Coast Latinos? I say to myself, because obviously we haven't done the history about it. Why are there so many more African American people on the East Coast than on the West Coast in terms of the so-called Latino culture? It's because when black people were brought from Africa, they were not brought straight here to the United States to be slaves. That was impossible. Nobody accepts slavery. Nobody accepts abuse in that manner. First, they were brought to the Caribbean to be conditioned for slavery. In the same manner that we didn't just grow up and decide to bang on each other one day and destroy each other over colors, we were conditioned to do that after a long period of time. The conditioning process included rape, torture, murder. In the past, if an African woman became pregnant on one of the slave ships, her baby was cut out of her body and stomped out in front of the men to show them the most precious thing you have in your culture, in your African society, is the woman, and you cannot protect her. You and that baby belong to us. You become property. That's why we have so many Spanish-speaking people of quote-unquote Latin American descent on the East Coast. Now, when I come to the West Coast and I come to see our family and I come to see our people, we may have very diverse backgrounds. Some of us may be from Mexico. Some of us may be from El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala, all over the place. But our story remains the same. Our divide and conquer philosophy amongst what happens to us play the same, playing one tribe against another, promising one that they're strong and powerful, telling one of them that you can be more successful than the other. You know, coming from New York City, I always really believed that mythology and that lie when they told us New York was bought for $18 from Native Americans, until I learned the real history of it. That simply a tribe in New Jersey across the Hudson River was bribed because they were at war with the Indians that were living in Manhattan. And they said to them, sell us their land and we'll give you money, we'll give you whatever you want. Imagine that process being completed out here with different gangs in different areas saying, oh, these are Norteños, these are Sureños. Sell me their projects. Sell me that man's house. You have no claim to that man's house, whether he's Norteño, Sureño, MS-13, or whatever he may be, but in your mind, you think that's my enemy. Sure, give me $1 million, I'll sell you his house, and you can go evict him, and if you won't leave, then kill him and his family. It gets rid of my enemies, and it puts money in my pocket, until one day that same man says to someone else who may be your enemy, sell me his house. And when you think about that, and when you think about how that was repeated over and over and over, you start to think, no, no, no. We were not just conquered because someone came and said they were stronger than us. We were conquered because someone lied and said that they would bring us freedom and justice. They lied and they said they would bring us peace and that we had all the opportunity in the world. I'll give you a very brief, a very simple explanation and presentation of the difference in between the reality of opportunity and what opportunity really signifies. Right here, I have a penny in my hand. Now, this is a very simple thing. Some of y'all can laugh about it, but maybe tomorrow, maybe 10 years from now, you'll understand the science behind it. Those of you who understand it now, I hope you pass it on to your peoples. If I flip this penny in the air, anybody, what's the probability between whether it's going to be heads or tails? Somebody tell me. 50-50. Very nice. Take this penny, flip it across the surface of this table. What's the probability it's going to be heads or tails? See, the average person would think it would be 50-52. The reality is that the face of Lincoln weighs a fraction of a gram more than the monument on the back. And the centrifugal science, because our people are scientific people. We are not just warriors that ran around with feathers like some people would like to stereotype us in movies. We calculated planet alignment. We were great masons that built things that have stood the test of time for thousands of years. Because this weighs a fraction of a gram more than this, when it spins, the centrifugal force will pull the face to the ground. And 80 out of 20, it'll be tails. So when you come here and they tell you you have the same opportunities as everybody else, no you don't. That's just what they tell you. They tell you everybody's the same, everybody works in the same way, but if you get caught for a crime, and a senator's kid get caught for a crime, who do you think is gonna get the 3 years probation? Who's gonna get the 5 to 10 in prison, brother? We always think that we have the fair flip, but at the end, we realize that because we are in this position, because the odds are against us, that they've been flicking us across the table for 500 years. So the odds are against you to succeed. But our people have always worked with odds. Our people have always been counted out, and our people have always survived. The fact that we became enslaved is the last couple of hundred years of our history. Before that, we have thousands of years of creation, thousands of years of building. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to your questions.
I'm the son of a Sandinista revolutionary. I was wondering if when you guys look back on your culture and your family, have you noticed anyone who was a revolutionary who like fought for the freedom of the country?
I can say that when I came from Peru, my father came here because of the political situation that was occurring there. It's interesting to note that in Latin America, what happens around the world affects us very much in the same way as what would go on in Iraq and Afghanistan might affect what happens now. In 1967, Israel fought what is called a six-day war against surrounding Arab countries. And at that particular time, all the world watched Israel prevail because of its connections to Europe and having logistical support and high technology weapons. So Latin America began to reform its military. It began to try and buy more weapons and create a science division for the people that were involved in the military. My father, being that in Peru, military service is mandatory, my father was sent to teach at one of these schools to teach how to better use science to try and destroy a person's enemy. And he was one of the first people that when all of this started happening and when the CIA began to send paratroopers and things down to Peru to destabilize whatever movement was on the left, he decided that it was time to find a different solution to just destroying one another. He was a person who wanted to build a better life for his people, and it began a huge, huge exodus of everything out of Peru, the jobs, the inflation. Because of that civil war that existed between right and left, I looked back and I decided to really look at my history, and I realized that I just didn't have indigenous or resistant blood, but I also had black people in my family, people who had bought their own freedom, people who had fought against slavery during that time, because a lot of people don't know that slavery existed in Latin America the longer than it existed in America. And not just slavery of African people, but the slavery of indigenous people too. And I think that these things were awakened in me because of what my family put me onto. But I know that it's not necessary to have a parent that does that. You can do that yourself simply by searching the history of the Sandinistas or any other revolutionary movement. But something important to notice is the fact that anytime we have a movement of this way, anytime that there's a chance that the people may actually have a say in their government, this is not about democracy, because this country has a habit of destroying every democratic movement that has ever come to pass in Central America.
How you doing? My name is Abel. I'm a 10th grader. I'm a sophomore. And what I have to say about these fellas right here is that, you know, I knew Rudy from United Players. And, like, you know, he took a whole group of boys down there. And, you know, I see the consequences. And that none of that shit ain't right. You know what I mean? None of it's right. So, I mean, now that you see some of these fellas are up in here, how do you know that one of them is going to get locked up or not? What would you guys say about them?
So what would you say to anybody, any of the youngsters in the school who may have just joined the gang, who are thinking about it, who are starting to be affiliated? What advice would you give them right now?
Obviously, nobody can change your life but you. Nobody has to deal with the circumstances and the choices that you make except you. I think the bottom line is to understand that over the course of these years, over the course of our history, we have gained no money from this. We've gained no land from this. We haven't made our people any stronger from this conflict. We've gained nothing. In fact, if you think about it, we've been working for someone else this entire time. I gave a similar speech when I spoke to a few members of Salvadorian gang. And I told them, do you understand the reason you exist is because of a general named Martinez Hernandez, a famous man whose brutal blueprint was used in all of Central America after his death. What Martinez Hernandez did was, after the election in Salvador, he decided to go around to places, regions that had voted against him. Similar to a president who would be elected in America and go around to states that didn't vote for him or didn't get the electoral votes, and began a massacre called La Matanza. The Matanza is famous because they spared no people. Martinez Hernandez's philosophy was that in order to fight an army, you have to cut the supply line. He said the supply line of the revolutionaries are the fact that the people support them. So you must make the people pay the price. If you kill a woman while she's pregnant, her child will not grow up to be a gorilla. If you throw the baby in the fire, the baby will never grow up to be a gorilla. If you kill the father before he marries the mother and has a child, if you take apart the student and murder him in the field, he will never go to college and have these radical ideas. And so it became a genocide that claimed tens of thousands of people's lives. And really, when people came to this country based upon that civil war and the legacy of that civil war, that's who created you. Think about who created you. Not the man who jumped you into the gang, not the person who introduced you to the homies that put you down with your squad or your set or your team or your hood. Think about the decisions, or think about your father who may or may not have been there. Think about the economy that surrounds you that prevents you from getting a job, otherwise you might have a different career choice. Think about the fact that the gangster rappers that you emulate and you love get fucked for their publishing, and they send their kids to private schools, and they don't want them in a gang like you. It's good enough to throw up that set in their video, but it's not good enough for their kid to be riding with you. Words for thought.
I didn't know how this history affect your life, but how did it affect your life?
I think this is a perfect question. So he wants to know how history has affected you. And one part is the history they've been giving and the new history you've been rediscovering. So I think we should focus on rediscovering your history.
always had a passion for reading, even when I was very young. Even when I was in prison, I would try to read anything that I could get my hands on. And I think the way it affected me was it made me realize that all of these situations that had occurred had not just happened to me and my people, that the same tactics of colonization were used against Middle Eastern people, they were used against Europeans themselves. I learned that Columbus's first slaves were not indigenous people. They were Europeans that were on his boat that rose up against him. You know, I learned that in Asia, similar things were done to them by the United States government or by other colonial powers such as Britain. And I realized that self-empowerment requires a lot of sacrifice. And too often than not, it's the people, the women and the children that sacrifice, and the men that enjoy the privilege of ruling the society afterwards. So it gave me a better understanding of trying to learn from other people's struggles and not just my own. Whether it's an African struggle, a Southeast Asian struggle, an Eastern European struggle, or whatever it may be. It gave me the desire to learn about other people. Thank you.
So with that said, my pleasure, I'm just gonna let the speakers close up.
I just wanna say, before you leave here, it's not a question of what other people tell you success is. It's a question of understanding what you consider success to yourself. I tell people that because when I got into prison, I always promised myself, yo, I'm gonna get a record deal. I wanna be a big rapper and make some money. And then I realized that going independent and not having a big record deal was the best success that I could possibly have. It gave me my own political agenda, the freedom to say whatever I want. My publishing wasn't owned by anybody, and I started making $7 a record, $8 a record. So that way I used it to put my sister through college, to buy 350 acres of land in South America that I grow whatever I want and I can live off of forever. It enabled me to buy my grandmother a house, to pay off my parents' mortgage, to pay off the car payments of my father's car. It enabled me to help to give to my family, to really build a unit. And that's true wealth. Real money, and I always tell people, because young people always come to me like, yo, son, I feel what you're talking about, man, but what about getting this money? I need to get this money. Okay, young player, well, what you gonna do with that money? As soon as you buy a car, it's worth half of what it was. The minute you roll it off the lot, you gonna rent yourself a nice place, or you gonna buy a house, you get a 401k, or in this economy, your 401k will be worth 50 to 60% of what it was before. Think about what you invest your money in. Think about the fact that every time money comes into our hands, it doesn't touch someone else in our community's hands. It immediately leaves our community and goes into someone else's hands. So the minute you get money is the minute that you lose money. Because that money's not going to your family and it's not building success for our people. Think about what you invest your money and your time in. Because you can't tell me that you value this or value that. You show me what you spend your money on, and I'll tell you what you value. And people can talk about their neighborhood, they can talk about their family or their clique or whatever. Don't tell me what you love. Show me what you spend your time on, and I'll tell you what you love. Go out there, have a good day.
There has been truces, barrio truces laid down in the past. We see that way back with this brother, and it's in this book that Cesar wrote. The brother named Rudy Cadena, Cheyenne Cadena. He created a truce between Norteño and Sureño that lasted for 1 year. And that truce was created inside the prison system itself. And it was the prison administration that made sure that that peace treaty didn't last. And they assassinated him. And he was comrades with another brother named George Jackson, right, that was part of the Black Panthers. And created another organization in the prison called the Black Guerrilla Family, another organization that fought for survival in the prison industrial complex. We have to understand that history. So recognize the truce also that happened in 1992 between the Crips and the Bloods. And that was destroyed also by the Los Angeles Police Department. So when I look at that history, I believe that there is hope and that we could come together, and not in a unified form, but in a form where we create solidarity. We understand our differences, but come together because we have a common enemy. I'll be real brief because we have about a minute. I work in
say the odds against me are crooked and impossible, like I was born with a hole in my heart. It's an obstacle. I left to die by the doctors in the children's hospital.